Blog Talk Radio.
And that's Who I Am by Casting Crowns. Thank you all so much for joining me today. I'm Andrew. I'm your host of The Drew Show. Please continue to check out our website, thedrewshow.com. Follow us on Twitter at DrewBTR as well. I want everyone to please check out my brother, My brother, his name is Chris Woodson. He just came out with his first CD, so please check out his website, chriswoodsonmusic.com. It's great. This upcoming Friday night at 8:30 p.m., we have Melissa Sandvig coming on our show. Melissa, about 2 years ago, Melissa was on So You Think You Can Dance. Melissa did something very rare on the show. She made all the judges cry by a performance that she did. So we're looking forward to having her on. We've had some other great shows as well, and thank you all so much for checking that out. We're so excited about our show tonight. I am pleased to welcome to the show today Mr. Jim Morris. Jim did something in his life that people said he could never do, and that's play baseball. But he didn't let that stop him by any means. In 2002, Disney even made a movie with actor Dennis Quaid called The Rookie, which is based on Jim Morris's life. I am so pleased to welcome him to the show today, Mr. Jim Morris. How are you doing, sir?
Great, Andrew. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, sir. Thank you so much for joining me this evening. It is such a pleasure to have you on.
Glad to be here. Glad to join everybody.
Thank you. And now, as from my understanding, you live in Texas now, is that right?
I live in Texas, outside of San Antonio, yes, sir.
So how is everything in Texas? Are you a big Spurs fan?
I'm a Spurs fan. I'm a baseball fan, though. So basketball is cool. It's kind of like the icing on the top, but baseball is my love.
Yeah. So you don't get into the whole NBA finals and all that, I guess, huh?
I check out the final scores. That's about as far as I go.
That's about it, huh? Well, like I said, thank you so much for being on the show, and I've tried to have you on for about the last year now, and I know our schedule's kind of conflicted, but it's such a pleasure to have you, and your story is so uplifting and everything. I'm so glad that Disney put this on film for everybody to see, and talking about your life a little bit, you moved around all of your childhood, basically, because your father was in the military. But you still kept the dream of baseball alive. And I also heard that you played a little football as well. But what was it about baseball that really made you want to pursue it more than anything?
I think with baseball, it's a game of life, and it's a game of chess. And the other team's always trying to figure out what you're going to do next, and you're trying to figure out what they're going to do, and it's just a big chess match. And other than that, it helped me get away from my childhood. In between the white lines of that baseball field, I could be the kid I was supposed to be, and I could enjoy life, and I could strike out people, and I could hit the ball, and I could run and catch, and I could tune out the voices that weren't supposed to be there as a child. And baseball just helped me get through childhood, basically.
Yeah. I mean, you definitely chose the right career path, if I should say. Now, as I mentioned a moment ago, Disney came out with a film based on your life called The Rookie, and it premiered in 2002, starring Dennis Quaid. How accurate was the movie from what really happened?
It's over 80% accurate, and Dennis told me that if I can get 80% out of Hollywood to take it and run, I'm proud of the movie. It's very factual. A few things were mixed in. Nothing out of the way that never happened kind of thing, but just kind of mixed in West Texas people with everybody. I didn't grow up in Big Lake. I grew up in Brownwood, but All of Central Texas people are the same. They all go to church on Sunday. They all go to football games on Friday night, and they have the radios tuned into football or church. So it's pretty much the same thing. So that was just kind of a big mixture. But, you know, when they told me that they were going to hire Dennis out of the other people who wanted to play me, I was excited because Dennis wanted to make sure I was happy with it.
Wow. That's great. Dennis seems like a really good guy.
He is. We had a good time putting the movie together, and you know what? It's on right now. My grandmother called me earlier, and she was crying. When I know she's crying when she calls, my movie's on. So The Rookie's on right now, and I'm sure I've got people who are Facebooking me right now telling me it's on.
Yeah, you know, I just watched it a week ago, I believe it was. It was on TV, and it's one of those movies that, you know, it's kind of like Rudy, for instance. You could watch that movie a million times, and it never gets old. I just love the movie. And, you know, one thing I really liked about the movie was there were no cuss words at all. There was nothing in there even close to it. Did you have something to do with that before the filming started?
You know what, Hollywood was a little bit worried about that when it first came out, and then Dennis did an interview and somebody asked him, and they said, you know what, there aren't any cuss words in it, or what are you going to do to bring in adults? And he goes, well, we try to throw stuff in, but you don't know Jim Morris's life, it's totally G-rated, so no cuss words.
And I love that, though, and you know, and that brings me back to a movie called, I believe it was Beethoven, that there were no cuss words in that. I think, and growing up watching that, I love watching movies like that that are no cuss words. I mean, I don't know why people understand really why people think that it makes a movie better to have that in there. I really don't.
It's just that's for people who don't really have a good vocabulary. For the people
right.
who. Movies, I'm very proud of The Rookie. My kids can watch it with their kids one day, and they know that Dad went out there when everybody else except a group of high school kids thought he would fail miserably, and he came out a success. My kids will know that. Their kids will know that. My high school mm-hmm. kids know that, and now their families know it, and so that's a pretty cool thing.
Yeah, it definitely is. And so you were very pleased with how it turned out, and is there anything that you would have liked to have seen differently in the movie or added in the movie or anything like that?
You know, I do a lot of speaking all over the world now, and I guess the one thing that I miss in being in a movie that everybody could experience was what certain things that my grandfather, Ernest, taught me. And they filmed that, and they had it in there, but the film was so long to begin with that all stuff about my grandfather ended up on the cutting room floor. And so now I get to talk about it. It's not in the movie, but I get to talk about it.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to mention as well. You, now, your grandfather was a big part in your life. Tell us about him and what he meant to you.
At 15 years of age, my parents moved me from Miami, Florida, where I played high school baseball, to Brownwood, Texas, where the football coach hated baseball, so we had no baseball program. But during that period of time, my parents did me the biggest favor they never knew they did. They moved me into my grandparents' house, and my grandfather, Ernest, had a menswear store in Brownwood, Texas, Ernest Morris Menswear. My grandmother was our church secretary for 30 years. And for 3 years, these two people taught me how not only to dream, but how to treat other people, how to respect myself, how to respect other people, how to look at people, shake hands, look people in the eye, yes sir, no sir, yes ma'am, no ma'am. And Ernest always said the most important person in front of you at any given time is the person right in front of you at that time. That person deserves 100% of your respect right then because they are in front of you. And he stood for what is right in this world. And I miss those things. And I see kids now, and I'm very disappointed with we've lost some of our morality. We've lost some of our ethics. We've lost a lot of our integrity. And to be able to look back at Ernest and be able to bring some of those things out in the audiences I speak to, I think, are incredible.
That is incredible. And so your granddad was – You're basically your dad when your dad wasn't your dad. Do I have that right?
Absolutely. For 15 years, I learned how to be a pessimistic, negative person. And then from 15 to 18, my grandparents taught me how to look at the world with open eyes and open heart and take everything as it comes.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned that your family moved you and to a place where baseball was really non-existent. How tough was that for you? I mean, growing up loving the game and then basically not even being able to find a baseball field anywhere around.
That was a big deal to me. We moved to Texas. It was all about high school football, and that killed me. Baseball was it for me. From the age of five, everywhere my dad got transferred, I made friends by throwing a ball hard, and I got picked by a team. I had a team full of friends, never had to say a word. We go to Brownwood, and it's all about football. And so that part was tough for me. Brownwood High School in my middle of my ninth grade year when we moved there was also the 30th school that I'd been to in 10 years.
Wow.
And so that was a lot of moving, a lot of different places. So baseball for me was a mainstay for most of my life until we moved to Brownwood, and then I had to show people I could play football. And it was tough.
Wow. I imagine it was. So the way they portrayed your dad in the movie, was that pretty much accurate?
That's pretty much the G-rated version. Yeah, that was pretty accurate.
Wow. And is your dad still around now? Are y'all close?
He is around, and he has missed his grandkids grow up because of some of the things, the differences that we have in our beliefs. He doesn't necessarily believe in honesty. I don't know how to put it more nicely than that, but
right.
I want my kids to know that life is about being honest and open and putting yourself out there when other people are not willing to do that, and my dad has not ever done that, and so he's missed his grandkids grow up, and I feel sorry for that, but I've tried to talk to him, and it just hasn't worked.
Yeah. Well, that's, I mean, I really hate to hear that, but Well, in junior college, you were actually drafted into the major leagues by the Brewers, and you were there, you know. And like I said, baseball is really non-existent in your life, and when you moved to Texas, and you know all that happened. But like I said, you were there when you were drafted by the Brewers. So what happened after that?
From 19 to 24, I had six different surgeries. I was fighting my way through the minors. I was fighting most of my young life and what I grew up with and those belief systems, and you're not smart enough, you're not good enough, why do you even try? Mm-hmm. And I felt entitled. And it took leaning back on that, quitting at 24, going back to college, and leaning on the concepts that my grandparents taught me to realize I can do anything I want to. It doesn't have to have anything to do with baseball. I can do whatever mm-hmm. I want, and I can be good at it. And that's the approach. I went back to school. I started teaching and coaching, and I thought, if I can't play the game I love, maybe I can teach it. And that's what I did.
All right. And I think people being criticized and telling certain people that, you know, that they can't do certain things and downgrading them, it really, really hurts mentally. And how did you find a way to rebound from that? I mean, I can't imagine, and in my own life as well, I mean, I've been through similar circumstances. How did you find a way to fight through that and be positive and say, you know what, I'm going to do this no matter what people say about me?
I think what I have is a fighter instinct, and when I get told that I can't do something or that it's impossible or that I'm not smart enough, I want to prove people wrong. And so when I was told I would never make it in college because I wasn't smart enough, I went to school and graduated with honors, and when I was told I couldn't play baseball, I went back at 35 and I made it. And when people tell me I can't do something, I just want to show them that I can. And perseverance, overcoming obstacles, and putting God out in front and letting God take care of it, because only God knows the plan for our lives. Other people do not. They can say whatever they want to, but they have no idea what God has in store for us, and it's all a great plan.
Right. I completely agree with you, and you couldn't have said that more perfectly. So you said that you were injured once you got drafted by the Brewers. What kind of injuries did you actually have?
I had three Tommy John surgeries. I had four shoulder surgeries. The last one I had ended up being while I was in college. My arm still hurt 3 years after I quit minor league baseball, and the doctor I had in San Angelo, who was one of my friends, said, "You will never, ever pitch again. It is physically impossible." Well, when I was young, I threw 87 or 88, and it was impossible to ever come back from that and throw that hard again. Well, come to 35, and I coach a group of high school kids in West Texas, and at 35, I go to a tryout, and I'm throwing 98. So human beings can't tell you what's impossible.
Yeah, absolutely. So how did you go from being drafted into the major leagues to Reagan County High School in Big Lake, Texas, to be a baseball coach? How did you transition that?
You know, it was tough at first because when I first quit the game of baseball, a lot of my friends were getting called up to the big leagues. I turned the TV on, I'd see my friends on there, and I thought, that could be me. And for a long time, I had a chip on my shoulder, and I thought, I deserve to be there as much as them. Well, over the course of time and over the course of my education, over the course of coaching, I realized it wasn't about me. Not only was it not about me, it never has been about me. And if I could help a group of kids see something through baseball that could help them further their lives in some other direction, that's a pretty good calling. And it doesn't have to be baseball, but baseball was a tool I got to use.
Right. All right. Well, you turned that team around in a place where no one thought there would be baseball. And how did you turn that team from only eight boys showing up that had to be a little discouraging, I would imagine.
It was a little discouraging, but you've got to understand the football mentality of Texas, especially in West Texas. And I talked two more kids into coming out for my team. And that first year, we learned a whole lot, but it didn't have much to do with baseball. And, you know, we won 10 games. All of them were at home. We did not lose at home that first year. The second season at Reagan County in Big Lake, I had 63 kids come out for my baseball team in a little bitty 2A school. And so, you know, it's how you treat people that matters. And when I taught them with respect and I coached them and I didn't talk down to them, I didn't talk through them, but I worked with them like they were human beings, because they are, and taught them they could dream anything they wanted to. And I just kept telling them how good they were. And sooner or later, they started to believe it.
Yeah. And like I said, I think that's amazing. And like I said, you turned that team completely. I mean, you made a baseball program in that town. Tell us about the promise that you made to that team.
We heard, well, two of my kids heard a disastrous talk in which my athletic director and head coach of football stopped me one day on my way to baseball practice to tell me that I've taken these kids as far as I can. They're losers. That's all they're ever going to be. This is a stepping stone for coaches like me. Oh, and by the way, you're a great coach, but you're always going to come in second to people like me because you're too nice, and you can't be nice in this world and succeed, so you've gone as far as you can. Well, two of my kids heard that because they were changing in the locker room. And before I could get to the practice field, it spread through my team like wildfire. And so the first two games of 1999 are just like they are in the movie. We got smashed. We got beat 15-1 and 15-0.
Wow.
After that second game, I stood on home plate. I sent my kids down the left field line, and I just said a prayer. What can I do to help these kids? How can I get these kids to dream? How can I push them without breaking them? Give me the right words. Let me know what to say. Help me teach these kids how to dream. Mm. And the answer came to me in a flash. Go down there and teach them the things that your grandfather taught you. And so I walked down the left field line. I'm looking at these kids. They're all looking at the ground. Nobody's looking at me. And I just start talking about everything that my grandfather taught me in those 3 years that I had him. I talked about life. I talked about going out there and chasing everything you possibly can. Don't let life live you. You go out and live life. You decide what you want to do. Don't let somebody else decide for you. And I said, right. If you guys have a dream, you go out and chase it. 100% of the time, you do not want to wake up one day and go, what if I would have tried a little bit harder?
Uh-huh.
And the whole talk was not even about baseball. It was about everything. And, you know, when I took the job, these kids said, Coach, we're not even going to graduate from high school. We're going to work in the oil fields and gas fields like our dads and our granddads did. And there's nothing you or anybody else can do about it. And I wanted to change that.
That's amazing. And, you know, I think, and have do you believe as well that all the criticism that you got in your life, it really helped you help these kids, and it's really helped you be a motivational speaker today. It's really made
that's
you strong.
That's one of those things I look back at now, and I think God has a master plan. I think God put me in the place that He wanted me in Big Lake at that time for that group of kids. Because I'd been through everything they'd been through, and I was the perfect person for that job at that time. And I helped turn them around. You know, almost every one of those kids except for one has gotten a college degree. All of them put themselves through school. Nobody played baseball after high school, but they went to college. They got degrees. They're business managers. They're business owners. They have families. They have kids. And they're raising their own families now. That's awesome.
That is awesome. That is awesome. I think I remember you hearing you say one time during during one of your speeches, that speaking engagements, that you said that one of the kids is actually working with the Coast Guard. Is that right?
Yeah, Matt flies helicopters for the Coast Guard, and I make a big joke out of it now just to let people know the demeanor of my team and how we talk to each other. And one night I was talking to Matt, and I said, Matt, I sure would like to fly in your helicopter. And he said, Coach, just go out in the bay and turn your boat over, and I'll come get you. That's just my kids, and we had a good time being around each other. We pushed each other hard, and they saw something in me that I thought was dead and gone, and I saw something in them that I thought could take them as far as they wanted to go, and we pushed each other, and look where we are.
Yeah, exactly. And you made another promise to them as well, that you, if they won the the state championship? Is that right?
It was a district championship in which the school had never won before in baseball.
Right, the district championship.
I will go out and I will find a tryout somewhere. In the back of my mind, I was thinking, this is going to be embarrassing. The doctor already told me I can't pitch. This can't happen. And lo and behold, the kids win. I go to a tryout and I find out I'm throwing 98. Not only am I throwing 98, my high school kids have been hitting 98 miles an hour.
Wow.
And so that was pretty cool.
That is pretty cool that high school kids can hit 98 miles an hour, because when they're facing other teams, those pitchers get up to what, 65 to 75, would you say?
We had a couple kids get up to 90, but we ended up getting knocked out of the playoffs by a kid who couldn't throw out of a wet paper bag. And he just couldn't throw hard at all. We couldn't hit him. We were way out in front. And I go to the tryout and I find out, I'm like, oh, no wonder we couldn't hit that kid. They've been hitting really good fastballs. Okay.
Wow. Wow. So you went out and found a tryout camp for the Tampa Bay Rays, and what an experience it must have been to do that. Did you just go out there and just say that you wanted to try out, and they pretty much gave you the ball, or what?
It was pretty funny. I went, Tampa Bay Rays had a tryout in my hometown of Brownwood, which is an hour and 30 minutes away from Big Lake. Uh-huh. And I walked up to the scout, and I said, look, I made a promise to a group of kids. If they did something nobody thought they could do, I would do something I know I can't do. It's going to be embarrassing, humiliating. I went through the whole deal. I said, the doctor told me I will never pitch again. You'll get a good laugh out of it, but you're going to let me throw or somebody else will. I made a promise. And my grandfather said, if you ever make a promise, you live up to that promise, so I'm throwing. And he looked at me, and he just started giggling. He goes, I'll let you throw. He goes, but you're going to throw last. These kids are here for serious business. So my 8, 4, and 1-year-olds waited around for 4.5 hours while I waited to throw. And after that amount of time, he calls me out to the mound. He gives me the ball, and you know, I throw a pitch, and he's shaking the radar gun, and I thought, I didn't think it would be that embarrassing. I don't even register on the gun. That's pretty cool. And when I get done, I found out, he goes, you've been throwing 98. And I said, you're kidding me. He goes, the first pitch you threw without warming up was 94. Wow. And I was just blown away. And the first thing I thought was, my kids have been hitting 98 miles an hour. Unbelievable.
Wow. That is amazing. Now, how fast were you throwing when you were drafted by the Brewers?
87, 88.
Wow. That just kind of sends chills down your spine. I mean, like, wow, you were throwing about 88 miles an hour. You had surgery that the doctor said there's nothing there. You'll never pitch again. And all of a sudden you're pitching 10 miles faster than you were before. That's amazing.
Yeah, then I get called up and I'm throwing 98 to 102.
Wow.
I mean, the doctor cut out over 80% of the deltoid muscle out of the top of my shoulder. He said, you have nothing there. You can't pitch. You can't train it. You can't lift. You can't get stronger. You have nothing.
Wow.
And God said, yeah, you can.
Amazing.
And I did.
Amazing, and I hope everyone hears that out there, that no matter what doctors tell you, I mean, yes, they go to school for many years, but, you know, if you put it to yourself, you can, you know, for anyone out there that's paraplegic, you can walk again. You know, you can do what you need to do again if you just, you know, just do it, you know?
Absolutely.
So tell us about the story. Tell us about you being in the minor leagues once you were signed by the Rays. Was it anything like you thought it would be?
It was kind of bizarre. I'm there with kids who are barely older than the kids I'm coaching, and they're asking me all kinds of questions. I'm like, you guys really are young, man. And, you know, one of the kids asked me if I actually threw harder because I had kids. And I thought, are you kidding me, dude? And it was just this big thing. But then when they saw that I could actually go out and I could throw like I was supposed to throw, they were like, wow, he's pretty good. And then the more I threw, the harder I threw, and they were like, wow. And so nobody ever really said anything negative to me. And, you know, I was there. Basically, these kids are trying to get to the big leagues themselves, and here comes this 35-year-old man who comes and just jumps by everybody. And nobody said a negative word to me. They just knew I could throw, and so they didn't complain.
Yeah, for a few brief scenes in the movie The Rookie, there was a few scenes that the players thought that it may have been a publicity stunt or anything like that. But was any of that true, or was everybody just in kind of open arms?
You know, I'm sure a few people probably thought that. They never voiced that to me, but that was a little bit Hollywood. There were, like the movie depicted, several times in AAA in which I wanted to quit and go home. I'd never been away from my kids. Like I said, there were only 8, 4, and 1 at the time, and I thought, this is not fair to them. I've never been away from them. I don't like it. I'm doing homework over the phone at the hotel with my son. I can't even afford a cell phone. I took a pay cut from teaching to be here, and I'm poor.
Wow.
And through the course of those months, every time that I would think that, I would just pray, God, if you really want me to do this, you got to give me a sign, and something would happen and help me stay there. And, you know, 3 months later, I'm in the big leagues. I got movie people knocking on my door, book people knocking on my door. My high school kids are watching me live out my dream in my favorite ballpark in Texas in front of the Texas Rangers. Kids I coached against are there. Their coaches got school buses and drove them up. My kids are there. It's just unbelievable.
Wow. That is amazing, and that so many people came to see you live out your dream and your promise to the team and everything else. And your debut game as a major league pitcher was at Arlington, of course, and against the Rangers, and you faced Royce Clayton to start it off for the last out in that inning. What went through your mind at that moment, from them telling you to warm up to that door opening to that bullpen?
Well, the first thing that went through my mind is I've thrown 3 days in a row in the AAA playoffs. There is no way they're putting me in the game. And they're like, Morris, warm up. And I warm up. Oh, they just want me to warm up in front of 40,000 people. That's cool. And then they said, you're in. And that's when panic struck. 40,000
wow.
people is a lot more than 30 kids in a classroom. And I opened the door to that bullpen, and I ran from the bullpen to the mound, and all I could hear was noise and see colors. And the closer I got to the mound, everything just kind of faded out. And I talked to my manager. I talked to my catcher. Royce was an all-star that year. He was coming up to hit. Tom Gooden was the runner at first for Texas. And basically the things that went through my mind is don't throw the ball to the backstop and don't hit Royce and start a brawl. Other than that, we're good to go, whatever happens. And, you know, if I strike him out, cool. If he hits a home run, cool. I'm not even supposed to be here. And I end up striking him out. And I was blown away. I just thought, God can do anything.
Right. Wow. I had a few months ago, we had John Rocker on our show, former Atlanta Braves relief pitcher, and he said one time that he was facing the New York Yankees in the World Series, and he could not tell you a single moment of what happened while he was pitching. It was all a daze to him. Did you experience that at all? Did it just seem like you were floating on a cloud pretty much?
You know, I would have, except for one thing. The guy who is one of the producers on the movie, and they caught me right when I got called up to the big leagues. He said, don't miss anything because it goes by in the blink of an eye. He said, if you blink, you're going to miss something that you're going to regret. He goes, pay attention to everything, show up early, stay late, have fun with it, and enjoy it. And that's what I did.
I tell you what, one of my favorite parts of the movie, and I have many favorite parts, but one of my favorite parts is when Dennis Quaid is walking in the locker room and he's passing by the jerseys of McGriff, Boggs, Canseco, all of them, and I'm just like, wow. Did you get any inspiration from those guys? I mean, they're just they were just incredible people.
I walk into a clubhouse where those guys are all standing, and they'd heard about the crazy science teacher for 3 months now, and I walk in, and Wade Boggs, who had gotten his 3,000th hit like a week earlier, comes up, and he hugs me, and he goes, that is the greatest story I've ever heard in my life.
Wow.
And at 35, being a teacher, all I could think was, but you're Wade Boggs, and you've been playing forever. And he just laughed at me, and he hugged me, and he walked off, and everybody else met me. It's just really cool.
That must have been awesome. Where's your favorite stadium that you ever played? What's your favorite ballpark?
You know, I love Texas. I love the Rangers. I love the stadium. But if you want baseball electricity, you go to Yankee Stadium or Fenway Park. Those people know their baseball, and they will let you know they know their baseball. And it is just an unbelievable feeling. I mean, it makes your skin tingle because the crowds are so into the game. So those two stadiums are my favorite to play in.
Fenway is absolutely amazing. I would love to. I'd love to go to a game at Fenway one day, and Wrigley is my next one. Those are two ballparks that I'd love to see. I'd love to see the Bronx Yankee Stadium before they moved out of it, but unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to do that. But you're a motivational speaker now, which we talked about a moment ago, and I think it's fantastic that you still travel the country and you still speak to people and you still enjoy helping people. What was it that you wanted to do this, and you knew you could help people by just your words?
Honestly, I didn't want to do this. I thought, I'm not capable of this. I don't have anything to really say. And between my agent and God going, this is what you're going to do. And I'm like, no, I'm not doing that. I don't want to get in front of people and talk. I can't do that. That's embarrassing. And then I went out and did it, and people were just – I don't get up there and tell people how they need to live or what they need to do. I tell people some of the mistakes I've made, what I've gone through, and some of the great teachers like my grandparents that I've had in my life. And when I get done, I get emails every day after every speech I give. They come flooding in. You will not believe the effect that your talk had on us. And I'm blown away by the power of God every single day. Mm-hmm. That I'm able to go out and make a living talking to people about my beliefs and some of the mistakes I've made. I make fun of myself. I have fun with crowds. We laugh, we cry, and we move on. And all of them get something out of it. It's just amazing to me.
Wow. And that is amazing. So what would you say gives you more butterflies than speaking in front of people or pitching on the mound in front of 50,000 people?
You know, I think for baseball, I trained myself my entire life to throw in front of 50,000 people. And once I got that first batter by me, it wasn't that big a deal. Speaking and having the ability to change people's hearts and their minds, that is something that's worthy. That's a worthy cause right there. And so I take that seriously, and I do get butterflies. And, you know, before I go out, every speech I go out, and they call my name, and they play the trailer for the movie. I said, please, God, just let me say something that you need somebody in this audience to hear. That's all I want. And that's before every speech.
Right. Wow. And you know, why do you think, in your opinion, why do you think that the world is like it is nowadays? You know, it seems like everyone wants to blame others for their mistakes or misfortunes, and everyone wants to find some kind of excuse so, you know, so they won't look like the bad guy. Why do you think that is?
We live in a great big world of entitlement, and we think everything should be given to us, that nothing is our fault. And God doesn't say that. If you read the Bible, that's exactly the opposite. You know, when I talk to people now, and when they ask me questions afterward, and they're like, where do you see us headed? And I say, well, I read the Bible. I see Sodom and Gomorrah. I see people who can't even get along with each other, let alone the rest of the world. We are in trouble, and we need somebody to come out and go, you know what? We can change this, one person at a time, but we can change it. And we go out there, we do the best we can, we own up to our responsibilities, and we say, that was my fault, and you go on. And if you always tell the truth, you don't have to remember what you said.
Right.
And if you move on with that, and you go, yeah, I did that, that was stupid, I'm sorry, and you move on, the feelings are so much better than if you deny. And so my big deal with my groups is the stuff my grandfather taught me. He said, at the end of the day, people are going to remember you for one thing. Did you live by your word? If you can live by your word and you live and die by your word, people are going to remember you because you were honest.
Right. That's exactly right. And do you have any interest in going back to possibly be a pitching coach, maybe for the minor leagues, or to just go back to be a high school baseball coach?
You know, in August, I'm going to be at Wrigley Field being the pitching coach for Under Armour at the high school All-Star game. Other than that, you know, I'm starting a baseball camp here where I live, and I'm going to start doing things my way, and some parents aren't going to like it, but we're going to have Christian-based values in my camps, and we're going to talk about integrity and character and discipline, and we're going to talk about owning up to our mistakes, and that's how I'm going to run my camp, and if people who want their kids to come here, they'll come, and if they don't want their kids to be honest or have character, then they won't come here.
Wow, I did not know that you're doing that until you just said that, and I absolutely love that you're doing that. I mean, that brings me to my next question, that how do you feel about the people that say the kind of things that, you know, they don't want their kids being taught the Bible in school, and they don't want the prayer in school? And I mean, when I graduated high school in 1998, and when I did, people would gather around the flagpoles and pray. We'd say the Pledge of Allegiance with the word God in it in our classrooms. And so much is being taken away from that now. And I think it's fantastic what you're doing. But what do you think went wrong?
Well, I don't know what went wrong, but I will tell you this. I feel sorry for the people who think they are bigger than everything else. The people who think that they know all the answers and they don't want to have to answer to anybody, I feel sorry for those people. And they're teaching those kids the same things. And there is a bigger being. There's someone who made us all. And whoever thinks that our perfect bodies and this perfect world came out of a speck of cosmic dust are so full of it, I can't even begin to amass the words that need to be said to that. I mean, our bodies work in perfect union the way they're supposed to work. And that doesn't happen by happenstance. A larger being has taken care of all of that, and for people to lose sight of that, I think it's mainly because they don't want to be told what to do anymore, and they think the Bible's telling them what to do. And instead of looking at the end of the game, they're looking at the rest of their life, and they're going, but I want to have fun now. I want to do what I want to do, knowing that if you just do what you're supposed to do, we know where we're going. We know the final score. We've won.
Right.
And we've lost sight of that.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Mr. Jim Morris, it's such a true pleasure for you to join us this evening. Before I let you go, please let everyone know how they can get in touch with you and how they can find out more information about you.
Got a couple of websites. JimTheRookieMorris.com is my speaking website. That goes through my agent in California. Camp63.com is the camp I'm in the process of starting up, and I've already got people calling me. I haven't even advertised yet, so I think that's going to do well. But those two sites are the places you can get a hold of me.
Okay. And do you have a Facebook fan page right now? Is there any way that we could, or Twitter, any way we could reach out to you on that?
You know what, Andrew? Let me go in and ask my wife, because she takes care of all my Twitter stuff, and I've got people Twittering me, and I answer them, and I don't even know how they got there. So let me ask her. Shauna, what is my Twitter website? Okay, Facebook. That's cool. Jim Morris, not the rookie.
I believe.
Morris, the rookie. Okay. I'm sure we can find you. Not a problem. And once I do find it, I will announce it on our next show as well. And I'll put it in the description of this show as well. I'll update that. I also want to send you, if it's okay, I want to send you an email to your Facebook and a link to this show. If you wouldn't mind posting it on your wall, I would greatly appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you keep inspiring others, and you keep doing the amazing work that you're doing. And may God bless you. And thank you so much for joining me this evening. It's such a pleasure to have you on.
Andrew, thank you very much.
Thank you.
You have a blessed day.
You too. Good night.
Bye bye.
That was former Major League pitcher for the Tampa Bay Devil Rays, Mr. Jim Morris. Such a pleasure having him on. Please listen to this, Who Am I by Casting Crowns. We have a little announcement coming up as well about a few shows as well, so stay tuned.
That the Lord of all the earth would care to know my name, would care to feel my hurt. Who am I that the bright and morning star would choose to light the way for my ever wandering heart? Not because of who I am, but because of what you've done. Not because of what I've done, but because of who you are. I am a flower quickly fading, here today and gone tomorrow. A wave tossed in the ocean, vapor in the wind. Still you hear me when I'm calling, Lord, you catch me when I'm falling, and you told me who I am. I am yours. I am yours.
Again, thank you all so much for joining me this evening. If you'll please refresh this page that we're on right now, if you're listening live, I have included our guest for this evening, Jim Morris. I have included the link below this description of his Facebook page, so please check that out. Please stay tuned for more shows to come. Follow us on Twitter at DrewBTR, as well as check out our website, thedrewshow.com. Friday night, again, we have Melissa Sandvig on the show. We're looking forward to that show. She was on So You Think You Can Dance, a beautiful young lady, and we're so pleased that we're going to have her on. Again, thank you all so much for listening to the show. From The Drew Show, this is Andrew. Good night. Tossed in the ocean.
but because of what you've done. Not because of what I've done, but because of who